Estonia. All glory to Srila Prabhupada
Keshavam. Bhave bhave yadha bhakti padayor stava jayate tadha kurushva devesha nadhastvam no yada prabhom nama sankirtanam yasya sarva bhava pranashanam pranamo dukha shamanam tam namami harim param janmadyasya yadonvayadidaradas charteshva bhignaswaran tene brahma hrida ya adikavaye muhyandiyal surayam tejo varimrudam yathavinimayo yatra trisargo mrishadhamna svena sada nirasta kuhagam satyam param dhimahi dharma projjita kaitavotra varamo nirmal saranam satam vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam tabatrayo nulanam Srimal Bhagavate Mahamuni Krute Kimva Pere Ishvara Sadyo Hridya Varudya Detra Krutibhi Shushro Shubhi Talchanal Nigamagal Padaror Galidam Halam Shukamukhadam Rudadrava Samyudam Pipada Bhagavadam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaham Sachidanandarubaya Vishol Patyadi Hedave Tavatraya Vidashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Numa Yam Pravrajandam Anubedam Abeda Krityam Dvaipayano Virahakatarama Juhava Putredi Tanmayadaya Taravobhinedu Tam Sarvabhuda Hrudayam Munim Anatosmi Yaswanubhavamakhila Shrutisaramegam Adhyatma Deepam Adititirshadam Tamondham Samsarinam Karunayaha Purana Guhyam Tam Vyasasunam Upayami Guram Muninam Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Jaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayel Kamaniya Kishore Mugdhamurte Kalavenu Konida Drudananendoho Mama Vaji Vijambadam Murare Madhurimna Kanika Bika Bika Bi Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimade Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Hidi Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prajarine Nurvishesha Shunyavadi Pashatya Deshatarine Shrimal Guru Jaranaravindabhyam Nama Vande Nanda Vrajastrinam Padarenum Abhishnasha Yasam Harigado Gidam Punadi Bhuvanatrayam Gobi Charanaravinda Paramanavi Nama Pidambaram Karavirajita Chakra Shangham Kaumodagi Sarasijam Karuna Samudram Radha Sahayam Atisundaram Andahasam Vadalayesha Manisham Hridibhavayami Komalam Kujayan Venum Shyamaloyam Kumaraka Vedavedhyavaram Brahma Bhasadam Puradomamam Mugam Karodi Vajalam Pangam Lenghayade Girim Yalkravatamaham Vande Paramanandamadhavam Om Shri Krishnaya Nama Shri Radhiyaya Nama So today we will continue from Srimad Bhagavatam where we stopped few weeks back. We were discussing last time Ajamila stories where we had seen that by chanting Krishna's holy name even once a personality like Ajamila who has committed severe sinful activities was able to go back home back to the spiritual world. So we discussed that in that class and continuing from there that eventually we know that in the third chapter of the sixth canto it continues where the servants of Yamadharma Raja, Yamaraja's servants they go back to Yamaraj and report about what has happened. So, at that point, Yamaraja also felt a little bit, he actually felt that he has offended Krishna. So, if a servants do mistake, it is actually reflects on the master. So it's the same thing that what has happened to the Yamadutas or the Yamaraja's servants, what they have done was not appropriate to bring Ajamila back to be punished by Yamadharmaraja. So it was in that instance, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is an instruction from Yamadharmaraja to his servants about the position of a devotee and one who chants the holy names of Krishna. What circumstances one devotee should be, what circumstances one should be brought to the hellish planets, and in what circumstances one should be left free without being touched by the servants of Yamaraja. All these things are coming later. So that is where it said in the beginning itself, Swayambhu Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapilomanu Prahlado Janago Bhishma Balim Vayasagir Vayam. That these are the authorities on the Bhagavata Dharma. Swayambhu, Brahma, Narada Muni, Shambhu, Lord Shiva. For Kumaras, Swayambhu, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapila, Manum, Kapila Maharshi, who appeared in the third canto, we studied about Kapila Vasudev. And Swayambhu, Manu, all these are great personalities. And ultimately, Balim, Vaya, Asageru, Vayam, that he himself is supposed to have instructed his people properly, which he did not do, and therefore he was regretting about it, and so he decided to expand that, the understanding of a person who chants the holy name and his position. So there are a few verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam which refers to the position of a devotee who chants the holy name of Krishna, and that is a very important instruction, because often people have the misconception that one who is chanting the holy name, he is not making much of a spiritual progress. People often come to this understanding because they think the process is so simple, so it should not be very much effective as well. This kind of conclusions people, or on the other hand, they also jump into the conclusion that if we make a big sacrifice where we invite a lot of brahmanas to attend and they involve in fire sacrifice, chanting all the Vedic mantras, that should be more pleasing to Krishna. So these kind of things that people misunderstand, that the importance or the significance of chanting the holy name is not properly understood. So to alleviate their doubts about the efficiency or the effectiveness of chanting the holy name, at that point Yamadharmaraja instructs in the Srimad Bhagavatam what the potency of the holy name and the glories of the holy name. So those few verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam are very significant. And one reads that, one can understand that what is expected from a devotee and who is a devotee. These things are explained in that verse. Namo charana mahalpim hare pasyada putragaha ajamilobiye neiva mrityubhashada muchyadam. That namo charana mahalpim, the glories of chanting the holy names of Krishna, is hare pasyada putragaha. That simply by calling him the son's name, not even thinking about the Supreme Lord, just because his son had that name, he called his name, the result of that, ajamilobiye neiva mrityubhashada muchyadam. That Ajamila was able to escape from death, or he was being dragged on to my vicinity, but he was saved from that situation. So that is the verse he begins with, that instructions to his servants. Then from now on he talks about what is the situation of a devotee. Edavadhalam akhamarharanaya pumsam sangirtanam bhagavado gunagarmanamnam vikrushya putram akhavan yadajamilobi narayana edi mriyamanam iyayamuktim. That then for getting rid of sinful activities, why one is put into distress in the material world is purely because of one's own sinful activities. And if one wants to alleviate those or remove, get rid of those sinful activities, Yamadharmaraja says to his servants, Edavadalam akhanarharanaya pumsam sankirtanam bhagavato gunakarma namnam. That if one is able to chant continuously Krishna's name all the time, he will in due course escape from all the sinful reactions what he has committed in this life, even in the previous lifetimes. Vikushya putra makhavan yadajami lobi narayane edimayamanamiyaya muktim. That this Ajamila, who was such a sinful personality as we saw in his life, what all he has done, that Ajamila, at the time of when he was pulled in by the Yamaraja's agents, just by calling his son's name once, which happened to be Krishna's one of the holy names, that even he was able to free himself from the reactions of that. That was the potency of the holy name. Even he has escaped from that. Prayena veda tadidam namahajanoyam devi avimohidam adir badam ayayalam trayam jadigradam adir madhushpidayam vaidanige mahadi karmani yujyamanaham. That what is required from the human society, Yamadharmaraja says there, what is required from the human society is that if they simply chant the different names of Krishna, which actually reflects the different qualities of Krishna, because all these names of Krishna is actually originating from the different pastimes what Krishna has performed at some time or the other. So if one simply chants them, chants these holy names, automatically he will be relieved from the sinful reactions. Then Ajamila's story is exactly showing that. It says here that that he has not even thought about Krishna when he chanted the holy name. But what has happened, the result was that immediately he was taken out of the out of that situation where he was going to be punished heavily, but he freed himself from that. But on the other hand, what is happening is, even the great personalities who thinks that they have studied and understood the Shastras, understood the Vedic literature, even they are even influenced or affected by the, or attracted by the glories of the Vedic sacrifices. Vedic sacrifices attracts them so much that they think that there is something solid here, the Vedic sacrifices. And if we perform these sacrifices, it will automatically elevate us to the heavenly planets or even eventually to liberation as well. With this false conception, we go through that path. And unfortunately, in almost all the Vedic literature, there is reference to performance of Vedic sacrifices. And these sacrifices attract people very strongly and they get affected by that. Trayam jadi gramadir madhupushpidayam vaidanige mahadi karmani yujyamanaham. That why are they attracted to that? Because that these sacrifices giving them the understanding that Vedic literature are meant for performing the Vedic sacrifices. Because of the Vedic literature, the vast Vedic literature contains so many mantras which are normally recited at the time of performing the sacrifices. So people get to the understanding that rather I will take to this path, by performing the sacrifices I can attain a higher position than simply by chanting the holy name. That faith is not developing in the potency of the holy name. That is what is mentioned there. And this can even happen to the people who have taken to the, who have even studied the Vedic literature thoroughly. Evam vimrsha sudiyo bhagavatyanande sarvalpana vidadati khalu bhava yogam temi na dandam arhandirayadyamisham syalpadagam tadabiham durgaya vadaham. That in those people, evam vimrsha sudiyo bhagavatyanande, those personalities who have analyzed this in their own mind about the Vedic literature, Vedic sacrifices and chanting the holy name, they eventually has come to this understanding that if you continuously surrender to Krishna, sarvalpanaya sharanam sharanyam yado mugundam parihrityagartam. In the Bhagavatam says that devarshi bhudam tandranam pidranam nagingaryo nayam rani jarajan sarvalpanaya sharanam sharanyam yado mugundam parihrityagartam. That here also it is the same thing, that sarvalpanaya sharanam sharanyam, that if one continuously or if completely surrender to Krishna, evam vimrsha sudiyo bhagavatyanande sarvalpana vidatade ghalu bhava yogam, that if he has developed that attachment to Krishna, what is bhakti means? Bhakti means nothing but love for Krishna. If one has love for Krishna, that is bhakti. And that love for Krishna has manifested and has been discussed by the acharyas or the great authorities like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srinarada Muni and so many other great souls. And they have divided this relationship between the devotee and Krishna in different ways. And that is how we find in Narada Bhakti Sutram and as well as in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu calls it as 5 different kinds of mellows. Narada Muni calls it 9 different kinds of mellows. So different, and Prahlad Maharaj calls it in a different way. So all these things ultimately refers to only one thing, that the devotee has such an incessant love for Krishna, and that love, when it that manifests one's heart completely, then the devotee is not too concerned about the mantras and the shastra. That doesn't come into the effect at all. Sarva alpana vidavade khalu bhava yogam temi na dandam arham yadayadyamisham. Gamadhama Raja says to his servants that if you find somebody like that in this condition who has totally surrendered to Krishna and who is always chanting the Krishna's different holy names all the time, you have no right to touch them. This is what he told them. He told them that you have no need to go to them, anywhere near to them, or talk to them anything. Teme na dandam arham yadayadyamisham syalpadagam tadabiham durgayavadaha. That even in some situation, you may think, you may feel that a devotee is sometimes committing some sinful thing or some sinful activity. Unknowingly, if it happens, even that is taken out of the equation. That is not considered to be serious, and you have no right to touch him because he is directly under the shelter of Krishna. This is talking about those devotees who have taken 100% shelter of Krishna. Krishna's formula is very simple. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vrajam. That one has to surrender to Krishna completely, 100% one has to surrender. And in that consciousness, if one is chanting Krishna's holy names, and if one is getting developed that attachment relationship with Krishna strongly, here Yama Dharmaraja says there is no need for you to go to them anymore. Evam vimrshya sudhiyo bhagavatyanande sarvalpana vidadade ghalu bhava yogam teme na dandam arham yadiyadyamisham syalpadagam tadabiham durgayavadaha. That after saying that, he instructed his men very strongly that you have no business to go to them anymore. But after saying that, he also thought, Yama Dharmaraja thought at that point, he should tell them who should be brought here, the next thing. So in the next 2 verses, that is what he has spoken. Te deva siddha parigita pavitra khadha ye sadhava samadrisho bhagaval prabannaha tan obasida dahareer gadaya vigupta neshamayam najavaya prabhavamadandem. That these devotees, what is their position? They may look from the external world, when one looks at them, they may not look very wealthy, they may not look very any of the material opulences in them. But because they have taken Krishna's shelter, because they have taken surrendered to completely to Krishna, the demigods even glorify them. Te deva sanga parigi deva siddha paritra parigida pavitra ghadaha. That demigods, the siddhas, and they all glorify these devotees. Why? Because it is in their interest that they realize it, that te deva siddha parigida pavitra ghadaha ye sadhava samadrisho bhagaval pramannaha. What is their qualification? The qualification is they are samadrisha. Samadrisha means they are equal vision. They have achieved already equal vision. In other words, in this creation, material creation, there are so many different living entities. Now, normally a conditioned soul discriminates them, starts seeing them from the bodily point of view. He sees everybody as this is white, this is black, this is brown, and this is man, this is woman, this is this is a bird, this is animal. All this different understanding has come to us in our conditioned state of mind because we have learned to relate with the body. So as long as that bodily conception is strong in our mind, we will always see these different dualities of this material world. But a devotee who has actually reached the state of consciousness where he is able to see that spirit soul in every living entity, he is the person who is referred to here. Tse sadhava samadrisho bhagaval prabannaha. Samadrisham, they have an equal vision to every living entity because they see that every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, what Krishna says, vidya vinaya sampanni brahmane gavihastini shuni chaiva shvapakeja pandita samadarshinaham. So you can see in spiritual life how important this quality is, samadarshinam. Samadarshinam means equal vision is necessary, that not to discriminate from one living entity from the another. In fact, in Krishna's creation, we say that everybody is equal. But this everybody is equal concept has come from the people who are identifying with the body. So when they talk about this equal equality, it doesn't mean anything. Because on a bodily level, we are all different. You cannot make it equal. But when we are equal, in reality, is on the spiritual level. That is where our real equality comes. But unfortunately, like many instances, when we try to bring the equality in this human society based on a bodily concept of life, it always ends up in problems because it is never equal. Material nature didn't create us equally like that. We all have been given different bodies by material nature's arrangement. And that body, because we do not know that this body has come to us due to our own previous activities, that is what is actually reflecting in this body, that because we do not understand these things, we start taking it from the day we were born, we was born in such and such a condition, so we are all equal in these conditions. It doesn't work like that. Krishna's creation, material nature's arrangement is such that on an external level, on a bodily level, we are all different. That diversity will always be there. Everything is different. You never see one living entity exactly like the same as the other person. Even when twins are born, they are never the same because of their consciousness, the way of thinking is different again. So in other words, everything that is related to the body will be different. But there is one place where there is everything on an equal level, and that is the equality what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Samadrisha Bhagaval Prabannaha. That only when comes to that realization that it is on the spiritual platform that every living entity or every living force in this material body is a part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna repeatedly says this in the Bhagavad Gita also. Mama ivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana mana shashtan indriyani prakritistani karshadim. That if you accept Krishna's words, Krishna's instructions on this, you can see Krishna is very categorically saying there, mana shashtan indriyani prakritistani karshadim. That this living entity, Krishna says, who is a part and parcel of me. That is how Krishna presents about us. Mama ivamsho jiva loke. All this creation, what is in this whole creation in this universe, what I have created, they are actually part and parcel of me. So when one comes to that consciousness, understanding that one is actually part and parcel of Krishna as much as any other living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, then in that consciousness one can achieve that equal vision. Otherwise it is not possible. Otherwise no matter how much artificially we try to make all equal, it's never going to be equal. That is the way material nature is created. If it was all equal, we should have been all looking alike. We are not looking alike all. We are all different bodies, different consciousness. But equality comes in only when it comes to the platform of spiritual life. Otherwise we are never equal. Ye sadhava te deva siddha parigita pavitra khada. Ye sadhava samadrisho bhagaval prabannaha. That such personalities who have come to that level of realization and who are constantly chanting and the holy names of Krishna, please do not bring them to me. This was Yamadharma Raja's instructions to the servants. Otherwise, you can bring them to me. And then he says them in the next verses. Tarana yadhama sato vimukhan mukunda padaravinda magarendra sada jasram nishkinjanei paramahamsa gulai rasatye jushtal grahe nirevarpani bhadda trishnan. In this particular verse, Ajamila's story, Yamadharmaraja is saying to his representatives or to his servants, Tananayadhyama sado vimukha anmugunda padaravindamagarandarasada jasram, that lot of people, lot of great souls, they enjoy associating with Krishna. They enjoy the association of Krishna. How? They enjoy in serving the lotus feet of Krishna. That is what they relish in life. That is their happiness in life. They do not enjoy anything else in this world. It is a state of consciousness of that person, a devotee who is very closely attached to Krishna. He experiences great happiness in serving Krishna's lotus feet or Krishna's different activities, or serving Krishna in any form is his pleasure. That is the pleasure of a great devotee. But when a devotee is serving like that, and it says here, Patan anayadhamasado vimukhan mukunda, that sometimes you find a lot of people, they have no attraction for that. They do not think that they have any relationship with Krishna. People fall into that category also. Often people you find that they do not have any attachment for Krishna. And if that situation happens, bring them to me, he says. Why? The reason for that is Nishkinjane Paramahamsakule Rasatnir Jishtadgrahe Nirayavarpani Bhadda Trishnan, that they have learned one thing, that due to their association with the lower modes of nature, they become offensive to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. They start thinking that the devotees are wasting time. They are busy, occupied in doing things which is not productive according to them. As far as they are concerned, one is not productive unless he is producing something in this world for others, for the sense gratification. That is what basically it means. Nishkinjane Paramahamsakulai Rasatnyair. Therefore, naturally the feeling among the non-devotees will be to look at the devotees as though they are wasting their time. This is how, although they may not explicitly say this, in their heart they may come to these conclusions. And not only that, in these personalities, they will get so much affected by their householder life. They will be very busy in managing their homes and enjoying their householder life. And when somebody gets into that situation, Yamadharmaraja says to his representatives that those people, you don't have to think about too much, bring them to me and they can be treated here properly. That's why he said, Nishkinjane Paramahamsakulai Rasatnir Jushtalgrihe Nirevarpani Baddhadrishnan. Baddhadrishna means that they are very, very attached to their householder life. So when one gets too attached to the householder life, what normally happens is, householder life is considered to be the center of committing sinful life, as well as the possibility of becoming selfish. Selfishness comes in householder life automatically. It's a natural thing that when one identifies oneself with the family life too much, automatically he feels that he has to look after them and he has no obligation towards anybody else. So this selfishness develops in the heart very strongly in the householder's case. So this householder has to have this understanding that he has only been given a certain concession by Krishna's arrangement, that although he is in a householder life, he also has a strong obligation to Krishna's service also. But in most of the cases, what happens is the householder tends to forget Krishna very easily than anybody else. In householder's case, this can happen very easily. Prior to getting married, he was coming to the temple, he was chanting the Krishna's name, he had enough time to read Srimad Bhagavatam and associate with devotees. But as soon as marriage happened, everything changes. Then it becomes sometimes once a month a visit to the temple. And then if you ask, why did you not come for the temple, I have not seen you for a long time, the answer will be, what can I do, I am now married, isn't it? So I got my family now, so where is the time for spiritual life? I am fating that one day this will all be finished, and which day never happens. And then that way the householder gets dragged out of spiritual life. And this is what happens to all householders' life. And householder life is simply nothing but, this is a place for this kind of situation can develop very much in a householder life. That is why, Baddhadrishnaha. Householder's life is, all what is happening is desires and desires. One desires many things, the wife was also desiring things, children are also desiring. If you put all these desires together in one pot, there is no time for any other spiritual activity. So where is the question of So that is the life what is condemned here. Yama Dharmaraja says to his servants that such people who have no... There is a statement in the third canto, if you remember, that Ahaha bahula himsam sanchidartai kudumbam tadidinamanivushnan strijido balalali. Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi, to his mother, Ahaha bahula himsam. He is beating his head with the hand and he is crying and saying this, Ahaha bahula himsam. That in household life, all one is doing is continuously accumulating for his sense gratification and the family sense gratification, nothing else. Ahaha bahula himsam sanjidartai kudumbam. Just for maintaining the family, he gets entangled in all kinds of things and he considers this is my duty. And he will have his own philosophy also to support all these things what he is doing. Sanjidartai kudumbam pradidinam anupushnan strijido balalalim. That not only he thinks like that, pradidinam anupushnan strijido balalalim. That his whole time is busy in pleasing her. That is his main job. All what he is doing is that how can I make my wife happy? How can my... And he is all the time, he will carry his children and backwards and forwards thinking that this is my purpose of life, looking after these children, nothing else. Pravidinam anubushnan srijido balalali vishadihi grihasaktam yadanam ayyabhakta kabila taniriditvam devahutyai nyagadil. Kabila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi, vishadihi grihasaktam. If one is getting too attached to household life, yadanam ayyabhaktam, then it is very difficult for him to take to the process of Krishna consciousness. Kapila taniriditvam devahutyai nyagadil. That Kapila Maharshi said this to Devahuti Devi. Exactly the same thing here you find Yamadharmaraja is saying to his servants also. Jihvama makti bhagaval guna namadheyam chedaschana smaradi dacharanaravindam krishnaya no namadi yachirat egadabi tan anayadhumasado agrava vishnu gratyan. Then Jihvana Vakti Bhagavad Gunanamadheyam, he will use his tongue to talk all rubbish in this world. But he will never chant Krishna's holy name once. Why? Because he has no attraction for that. He is thinking that Jihvana Vakti Bhagavad Gunanamadheyam, the tongue is supposed to be meant for glorifying Krishna. It is meant for chanting Krishna's holy name. That is how all the great personalities in the Srimad Bhagavatam explains the purpose of the senses, different senses. There is a chapter in the 10th canto which is referred to the Shri Gita. It is called Vedas Personified comes and glorifies Krishna at the end of the 10th chapter. It is known as Shri Gita. And it is one of the chapter which gives you a great insight into the Vedic literature. Because it is one of the most difficult chapters also, because some of the things what is explained is very hard to understand. But at the same time, it says there that Mathartanja Bhava Artanja, that Krishna didn't give us the senses simply for gratifying it. That was not the purpose of giving these senses to us. Senses were given to us to serve Krishna. That was the idea of giving the senses. But unfortunately, we have misunderstood that. Or due to our own conditioning and due to association with people who are engaged in sense gratification, we also started this process of gratifying the senses. And then that process continued whole lifetime. And then it becomes very difficult to withdraw the senses from that. That is why it is said here, Jihvaiga Jihvana Vakti Bhagaval Gunanamadheyam. That tongue has got the highest responsibility because tongue is the leader of all the senses. Other senses follow the tongue. The reason being that tongue has got dual functions. Unlike all the other senses, there are 5 senses of knowledge and 5 senses of action in our body. But out of all that, who is the leader of all these senses? It is the tongue. Why? The tongue has got 2 functions, a dual function. It wants to talk all the time, and it wants to taste some nice food all the time. So because of these dual functions, he is considered to be the leader among all the senses. In one instance in the Ekadashi Skandam Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says there about this particularly, that unless you win over your tongue, unless you get your tongue under control, you can take it for granted that you cannot control any other senses. That is how Krishna puts it. That comes to controlling the tongue is the first thing, and therefore, and that control tongue, if it is used properly in Krishna service, automatically you can see that the Madhurma Raja accepts them. That is why the word tongue is used here more than any other senses. Jihvana Vakti Bhagaval Gunamamadheyam Chedascha Nasmaradi Tacharana Aravindam, and he never uses his own mind and the intelligence to remember Krishna. That means the mind is meant for meditating on Krishna's form. Tongue is meant for taking prasadam and chanting the holy name of Krishna. Ears are meant for, in the Ambarisha Maharaj's case, in the 9th canto, you will see how Ambarisha Maharaj used, he was a king, a great emperor. And this emperor, Ambarish, he was conscious so much about the use of his body, how it should be utilized. And it says there that that the utilization of different parts of his body, how he has utilized in Krishna service, comes in the 9th canto later on. So from this you can see, from the life of these great personalities, that they knew that sense gratification is not the goal. Sense gratification is never the goal. Sense gratification is allowed in certain cases with concessions. But unfortunately, we have accepted that sense gratification is the whole goal of life. And then the whole problem begins from that. So, Vyamadharma Raja says, those who are engaged in such activities, Krishnayano Namadi, one who do not want to pay obeisances to Krishna, not realizing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if one does not pay his obeisances to Krishna, echiram egadabi tan anayadhama sado agrada vishnu gratyan, bring them over to me, he says, we will sort it out when they come here. That's what say, jikhu anamakti bhagavel gunanamadheyam chedaschana smaradi tacharana aravindam krishnaya no namadi echiram egadabi tan anayadhama sado agrada vishnu gratyan. And this way, he spoke about the whom he should bring and whom he should not bring. That is how Yamaraja puts into, Yamadharma Raja told his representatives like this, whom you should bring them and whom you should not touch them. That way he instructed. After that, after this was over, Yamadharma Raja felt very, very uneasy for having touched Ajamila, for having sent his men, because after all, Yamadharma Raja did not personally commit the mistake. His servants has done the mistake. But still he felt that he has offended Krishna. So therefore, at that point, there is a verse in the Bhagavatam where he apologizing to Krishna. That is the next verse. Talkshamyadam sa bhagavan purusha purano narayana sa purushai radasal asalkritam nam swanamaho navidusham rajidanjalinam shandargariyasinama purushaya bhoomne. That please forgive me, he openly apologizes to Krishna for what I have done. My people have gone and touched Ajamila, which they should have never done. Talkshamyadam sa bhagavan, all my apologies to you, please forgive me from what I have committed. Purusha purano narayana sa purushaira salkritam na swanamaho navidusham rajiranjalinam kshandirgariyasinama purushaya bhoomne. Yamadharma Raja says there that it is the quality of the great personalities to forgive people when somebody commits an offense like that, comes unknowingly, without knowledge. So I have committed an offense like that, please forgive me. From saying this, Yamadharma Raja fell down and paid his obeisances to Krishna at that point. And with that verse, Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Ajamila comes to an end. But at the time, Sri Shivan was in so much ecstasy after talking about this story of Ajamila, that you can see in the Bhagavatam, Sri Shivan's mind, how it was going through. Sri Shivan at that time says to Parikshit Maharaj that, I heard this story from sage Agastya. It was, after all the great sages, they meet each other often. And when they meet each other, they discuss also transcendental topics. That's not United Nations, it's a different kind of discussion. Then they discuss each other about topics which will ultimately bring benefit to the society, benefit to the every living entity. And in that discussion, they will transmit messages which they feel is important for the people who want to advance on the spiritual path. And it is on one such occasion that Sri Shukan met Agastya Maharshi in the Malaya mountains. Agastya Maharshi is considered to be the sage who performs his austerities and penances in the Malaya mountains. So there he meets Agastya Maharshi. In it, Agastya Maharshi who told about this incident, what happened to Ajamila, the complete story. After all, these sages are very, very powerful people. They have so much transcendental consciousness that they can see through things much clearer. And they were able to say that Ajamilas have achieved this. And it is a lesson for many people to take from Ajamila's life. And therefore, he thought that he should say this to Sudev Goswami or Shishugan. Shishugan heard this and Shishugan said to Parikshit, I heard this from Agastya Maharshi when I met him in the Malaya mountains. And it is that story what I have repeated here. And at the end of that chapter, there is also this story of fear of what has happened. The Yamadharma Raja's servants, from that day onwards, they were a little bit careful in dealing with devotees. That is how it says in the Bhagavatam. Because from then onwards, they became conscious that there is a tight restriction on whom they can bring them over to the hellish planets. Prior to that, it seems that they had no understanding. And to prove that point in the Bhagavatam, there is another incident mentioned also. That Lord Shiva's, one of the expansions is Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni is a very, very powerful personality. In the all the Vedic literature, you will find him, like Sage Agastya and Sukadeva Goswami. Like that, among the great sages, Durvasa Muni also is a very powerful personality. And this Durvasa Muni story, it's a very well-known story to people who have read Mahabharata and who have seen even the film. They will know this, this incident, what happened to Durvasa Muni when Pandavas were living in the forest. Pandavas were living in the forest for a long period of time, because when they lost the gambling, in the gambling process they lost the game to Duryodhana, and the understanding was that they will go and live in the forest for 12 years or so. And during that time, all the Pandavas, five brothers and Draupadi and Kunti Devi, they were five brothers, their wife Draupadi and Kunti Devi, they were all together living in the forest. In and it was at that time, it was a difficult time for them. The distress Pandavas gone through at that time is beyond our understanding, that how much distress the devotees have been put into by Krishna's plans. And these devotees, they were going through a very, very hard time. And it was at that time that by Draupadi, by her special effort, she was always finding it difficult to feed the Pandavas, and it was she felt her responsibility to make sure that they had enough prasadam all the time. And in that process, one day Draupadi has been given this, what is known as the Akshayapatram. Akshayapatram means the pot by which, when it was presented to her, the understanding was that unless and until she has eaten from that, the food is always available from that pot. So Akshayapatram was given to her, and she was serving from that pot. It was providing unlimited food to the Pandavas, as much as they required. Particularly feeding Bhima was the greatest difficulty. Everyone else she could feed, but Bhima was always a difficult person to satisfy. So in that way they were living in the forest, and it was then that by arrangement of Duryodhana, one day Durvasa Muni came there. So Durvasa Muni came there with, not alone, if he had come alone it could understand, but he has come with hundreds and thousands of his disciples. All together they arrived on the scene. And when they arrived on the scene, they also announced that how hungry they are to have some food. So it is the duty of a householder to feed a guest under all circumstances. No matter how you do it, that's another question, but it has to be done. So that was Dhishthira Maharaj was known for his commitment to dharma, how serious he was about that. So he told, seeing the serious situation, he realized that he could ask Durvasa Muni and others to go and bathe in the river and then come back. So meanwhile, by Krishna's arrangement, Draupadi already had a meal, and there was nothing else left in the pot for that day. So it was then that Krishna appeared and asked Draupadi for some food, and Draupadi couldn't offer anything, but Krishna insisted that from the Akshayavatram he could find something, and Krishna has eaten something from the pot, whatever little whatever Draupadi has offered. But the result was that Durvasa Muni, after bathing in the river along with his disciples, they felt that they do not want to go back again to Yudhishthira Maharaj, because they started feeling as though they had a fantastic feast. When they came out of the river, they were, after bathing, they felt that they couldn't eat any more anything. A sort of satisfaction inside came to them. And this is known in mentioned in the Mahabharata as the yogic power of Krishna. Krishna's approach, Krishna uses his yogic power at that time to fulfill all their desires for, to fulfill the desire for eating. Therefore, he fulfilled in that way. So when this thing happened, Durvasa Muni, because he is a jnani, he also can see things. He is not somebody like us. Because he could see what was happening, he realized that Krishna is there already, protecting his devotee. So there is a statement there by Durvasa Muni in the Mahabharata that I am not going now back to visit Yudhishthira Maharaj. And the only excuse he has given was that Yudhishthira Maharaj has satisfied all my needs right here in this river itself. So giving this excuse to all the other brahmanas who are present there, Durvasa Muni didn't even go back to see the Pandavas or Draupadi Devi. He went straight away, left the river and went back, continued his journey further. So at that point, Durvasa Muni says there, I have learned a lesson before in the case of Ambarish. Ambarish Maharaj, I tried to tease him once, and at that time I was taught a lesson that if you deal with a devotee, if you are not careful, what can happen, I have realized. And therefore, from that point of view, from then onwards, I am careful while dealing with the devotees. So that is the same thing what Yamadharmaraja has been telling him, that if it is a devotee like that, like Ambarish Maharaj, whether it is a jnani or it is a yogi, they have to be a little bit careful before they approach a devotee. But only thing is, that devotee has to be like Ambarish Maharaj, not like us. So that is where the difference comes, that Ambarish Maharaj was such a devotee. In the Bhagavadam, it says here that Durvasa Muni, when he lost to Ambarish Maharaj, he was specifically told by Krishna, you are much more learned than Ambarish Maharaj, he says to Durvasa Muni. You are much more learned than Ambarish Maharaj. You have much more austerities and penances to your credit than Ambarish Maharaj. This is how, because Durvasa Muni started asking these questions to Krishna. Why have I been put into this awkward situation? Why did you put me to this situation? In fact, I am much more wealthier than him as far as knowledge is concerned. What is King Ambarish knowledge? He doesn't have much of a knowledge. This was Durvasa Muni's position. And he has not performed austerities and penances the way I have performed. This was all due to his credit. Krishna says, that is very good, you are right. Jnanam, tapascha, both knowledge as well as austerities and penances is far, far higher for you. But, vinaya nidam eva manyam. That vinayam means bhakti. The devotion Ambarish had, you don't have it. So since you don't have that devotion, all your so-called knowledge and all your so-called austerities and penances has no value as far as Krishna is concerned. So Krishna very openly declared this to Durvasa Muni, and Durvasa Muni kept that in his mind all the time since then. And that is why in this particular incident, when he came to see the Pandavas, he didn't want to go further from that. Normally, it is not Durvasa Muni's habit to leave people like that. When he goes somewhere and he finds something is not right, he will set it right before he leaves the place. That's him. He has done that even to Indra. He had no problem doing that to Indra. The result was that the whole heavenly planets, including all the inhabitants of heavenly planets, was more or less living like an old age pensioner's home. He locked them up in that situation. It is in the Bhagavatam, that story. So, like this, you can see a devotee's position when Yamadharmaraja says here that this is actually the situation of a devotee of that status who has pleased Krishna and surrendered to Krishna by chanting the holy name, the process of chanting the holy name. So with that, that story finishes. And then we move on to the fourth chapter in the first three chapters in the sixth canto refers to the story of Ajamila. So when Ajamila's story finishes there, it is from then what begins as if we are going back to the fourth canto again. So why we are going back to fourth canto is, because earlier we talked about a personality called Daksha, Daksha Prajapati. Daksha Prajapati was given the authority to increase the progeny. In the process of creation, Daksha Prajapati comes in there. So this Daksha, if you remember the story, what Daksha has done, Daksha has offended Lord Shiva to such a length that eventually he had to accept the head of a goat, and he was wandering around with the head of a goat for a long period of time. Then Daksha, who gave up his body at the end, he got a rebirth again because by then he apologized to Lord Shiva and for the offense what he has committed. And then when he was forgiven by Lord Shiva, he could accept, give up that body and accept another body. So Daksha Prajapati now takes birth in this sixth canto now as the son of Prajedas. Prajedas was the 10 children of Prachina Brahis, who was performing great sacrifices. We spoke about that. And Prajedas means they were children of the same king, Prachina Brahis. But they were all given one name, Prajedas. Only reason for that was they were all united in one thing, in serving Krishna. That was their consciousness. All the time, Prachedas, I mean their consciousness was same. And because all of them were united in this one particular topic, they were given one name to all of them together as Prachedas. So this Prachedas, they were performing their penances. And after they were performing the penances, when they finished and came back, they saw the whole planet has been covered by the trees. And when they saw that, they got upset about it, that because there was nobody to rule the planet has been taken over by the trees. And from that anger, what came out of their eyes, it started igniting the fire of all the trees, and the trees started burning. So the whole planet was getting burned by the fire of by that emanating from their eyes. And it was in that situation that Prachedas and Chandra, the moon, came over to pacify him and requesting him to cool down and to withdraw the fire and save the trees from disaster. After all, they have not done anything wrong. They have just grown up in this planet and they have a right to grow. But personalities like Prajedas should not get upset about it. Rather, they should forgive them for their offenses. And accordingly, Prajedas ultimately married the daughter who were brought up by the trees, which is known as Varshi, or the daughter of the trees. She is known as Varshi. He married her. And from that marriage, Daksha Prajapati got his next body. That is how we find here. From fourth canto, we left Daksha Prajapati there. Then Daksha Prajapati comes back here now in the sixth canto as the son of this relationship between Prajedas and Varshi. So when he was born, from that marriage, when Daksha Prajapati was born, Daksha did not have the potency to create first. He was not given the potency to create. Rather, he was an ordinary person in the sense that he wanted to create, but that potency was not given to him. But he was given instruction that if he want to continue creation process again, he should perform penances. That is how he continues his penances again. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is reference to his penances. He goes to an area known as Akhamarshana Tirtham. That is a particular holy place where he went to perform these penances. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find one thing interesting, that any time when you want to execute spiritual activities, performing spiritual activities in holy places, in certain specific places, has a higher effect and or a higher benefit from that is derived. It's natural. It's not something you can see that in many places in the Bhagavad mention. Even when Krishna's own children and the grandchildren, when they offended the sages at the end of the 11th canto, you will find that they offended the sages. And the sages cursed them that you will all beat up each other and kill yourself. At the end, this is what instruction that was given to them. So at that point, when this curse was given to them, later on, this was discussed in the assembly of the Ugrasena, King Ugrasena's assembly in Dwaraka. At that time, Krishna was present there. So everyone was asking how we could escape from this curse. And it was then that Krishna came up with the idea that if you want to escape from the curse, what has been given to you by the sages, the only way you can do that is by going to Prabhasam. Prabhasam was a holy spot. Aham Prabhasayo Yama. It says in the Bhagavatam that go to Prabhasam, because in Krishna's eyes, Prabhasam was a holy place to go and execute spiritual activities there. And go there and please and invite the sages there, offer them nice prasadam, serve them nicely and please them. And thereby, by their mercy, you might be able to free yourself from the reaction of your sinful activity, what you have performed to upset them. So that is how Krishna has instructed them. And like that, you will find in the Bhagavatam, in many, many instances, Krishna himself, when he was in Dwaraka, in one instance, he went to Samanda Panchakam, that is Kurukshetra today. He went there in a lunar eclipse time, because at that particular eclipse time, Krishna wanted everybody to come there to join him in performing spiritual activities. And that is where Krishna performed sacrifices as his parents. Vasudeva and Devaki performed sacrifices in that instance. Similarly, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna instructs Uddhava to go to Badrinath. Why? Because in Badrinath, Krishna knew that it is a place where this knowledge what Krishna has given to Uddhava will stay there permanently and it will guide the world from that point. So, and similarly, Ajamila went to Haridwar because Haridwar had there the... So, this is usual that there are certain places which has got this special potency, and spiritual life, when it's executed in those places, it automatically has a higher effect or higher benefit from that. So, in that similar way, you find here, Dasha Prajapati went to this particular place called Akhamashanam. Akhamashanam, the word itself means the place which wipes out one's sinful activities. Sinful reactions, sinful activities and sinful reactions is the cause of all the distress in this world. There is no doubt about that. One who accepts the laws of karma, one can easily understand that it is a sinful life and sinful activities that brings this distress to the society at all times. There is no doubt about that. And only the sages who knew, who can see these things, they have repeatedly put this idea across to our mind that accept this principle. As long as you accept this principle, you don't have to suffer. And then, once you accept that, and automatically you will control your mind, you will control your activities, and thereby you can stay in this world peacefully. Otherwise, it is not possible. If you let the mind go in the way it wants to do things, and if you do not accept the principle of the law of karma, automatically the mind will drag you into one after the other. We will perform one mistake, then to recover from that, you will do another thing, and from that another one. Like this, constantly, continuous. That is why Kunti Devi, when she prayed to Krishna, what did she say to him? She says to him that, Bhavesmin Klishyamananam Avidya Kama Karma Bhi. See the words what she has used. Avidya Kama Karma Bhi. Avidya is the cause of everything. When you do not know something, what do? You do everything in the wrong way. That's bound to happen. You can't avoid that. These are the laws of material nature. Bhavesmin Klishyamananam Avidya Kama Karma Bhi. That avidya, because due to ignorance, so many desires in the mind. And due to this, all these desires, you want to fulfill those desires. Kamya karma bhi. Then with the desire to fulfill, with the desire to fulfill all that material desires, you engage in sinful activities. And the result of that, one has to shravana smaranarhani karishyani dikejanam. Kunti Devi says to Krishna, bhave esmin grishyamananam avidya kama karma vi shravana smaranarhani karishyani dikejanam. That if one somehow or the other comes to understand your position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and start hearing about you and start chanting your holy name, he will be pulled out of this illusion that this material world is a place for enjoyment, and he will come to his senses somehow, and then he will become a person who will be relieved from all distress. That is the only way to become free from distress. Not by our manipulation, we don't get to that situation. Bhavesmin Vishyamananam अविद्या काम कर्मभि श्रवण स्मरणार्हानि करिष्यानि दिगेजनम्. But Kunti Devi, when she says that, there is a beauty to that. There is something more to it. Kunti Devi doesn't say, this is my opinion, like we all say, or this is my opinion. No. Kunti Devi never once said, any time, that is her humility. That mother, who is such a great personality, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is precisely the reason why in the beginning itself, Kunti Devi's prayers to Krishna has been put as the first set of prayers spoken by the great devotee. And then Kunti Devi never once said, it is my opinion. She says, it is opinion of the great personalities. That is how she puts it to Krishna. Krishna very much appreciated at that time. And Krishna, Kunti Devi also said, that the cause of your appearance in this world, Krishna's appearance in this world, was to educate people, to make them realize this, that by chanting your name and chanting your glories, one can escape from the sinful activities and go back home, back to Krishna. Bhavesmin krishyamananam avidya kama karmabhi shravana smaranarhani karishyani digejanam. So this is the way the law of material nature works. And knowing very well that when Daksha Prajapati went to Akhamarshana Tirtha, where he was performing these penances, the result was that he obtained from Krishna the potency to create the progeny again, or he is known as the progenitor. Earlier, we saw in the third canto that 10 Prajapatis were created by Brahma. From Brahma directly the Prajapatis were created. They were all given the ability to create. But out of the 10 Prajapatis, only 9 took up the process of creation. Mariji, Apri, Angirasa, Pulastya, Pulahakradu, Bhrigu, Vasishta, Bhrigu, Atri, Bhrigu, Vasishta, Dashamas, Tatra, Narada. Narada Muni is the 10th person. So in these, among these 10 sages, all the 9 were engaged in the procreation process, or they were known as progenitors. Dashamas, Tatra, Narada. Narada Muni did not get involved. Narada Muni stayed out of it. That is Narada Muni's good fortune, that Narada Muni's good intelligence, that he sensed the danger, what is waiting for them. And therefore, Narada Muni had a big problem. Throughout Bhagavatam, you will find Narada Muni had to fight with these people all the time. Because what was Narada Muni doing? Narada Muni was doing only one thing. He was preaching to them to give up householder life. And these people are creating the householder life as much as they could. So there was naturally a conflict of interest. That Narada Muni's business was to send people back to the spiritual world as quickly as possible. He was telling them, don't get entangled here, get out of this place and go. Whereas the Daksha Prajapati and so many others were telling them, have a good family life, when you are fed up, you can take to spiritual life. This was their instruction. So this is what is coming in the next few chapters. This fighting between Narada Muni and Daksha Prajapati. That is what in the next 2 or 3 chapters. So Daksha Prajapati goes there. Daksha Prajapati performs all these austerities. And automatically Krishna has given them these 2 types of creation comes there. One is from Rayatas and the other one is from Manas. One is from the semen and the other one from the mind. 2 different types of creation comes there. And that is why he was able to create so many living entities. So many living entities comes from that creation. And Manasika Srishti, that is the creation from the mind, was easier for him, which we do not have. This creation process, people all have this understanding, it's only possible through the seminal process. That's the only process we know, because that's what we see day and night, and that's what we also engaged in. But because in the case of Daksha Prajapati, Krishna has given him this special benediction to him, that he will get the opportunity to create from his mind alone. So he continued the process of creation. And during the process of creation, that Daksha Prajapati pleased Krishna very much. And that is why in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is known as the Hamsaguhya prayers. So this Hamsaguhya prayers comes in that chapter where Daksha Prajapati performs his penances and pleases Krishna. And that prayer is particularly important. You can see Daksha Prajapati was not a very ignorant person. He has also, as a Prajapati, he has been given the leadership of among all the Prajapatis. Even in the sacrifices we saw before in the 3rd canto, in the 4th canto, that Daksha Prajapati was given a special position along with the three trinities, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. He was given an equal position like them, only because he was the leader among the Prajapatis and he was in charge of the process of creation. So Daksha Prajapati, in this particular instance in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find his glorification of Krishna in the Hamsaguhya prayers. And that prayers we will read now, and we'll go through those verses. Shri Shugavajam Devasuranam Sargo Naganam Magabachinam Samasiya Proto Yastu Swayambhuvendare Tasseva Vyasam Ichami Yadum De Bhagavan Yada Anusargam Yaya Shakya Sasarja Bhagavan Pada Shri Sudavajam Iti Sambhashtam Agarnyam Rajarsheer Bhadarayani Pradinandi Mahayogi Jagadamani Sattamaha Shri Shugavajam Yada Prajeda Saputra Desha Prajina Varhisha Andha Samudra Adunmagna Dadushurgam Drumayar Gurnam Dube Bhyakradhyamana Ste Tabo Dividamanyava Mukhado Vayumagninja Sasurju Stadirakshayam Tabhyam Nardahyamanam Stam Ubalabhya Guru Duha Rajavajam Mahan Somu Manyam Prashmayanyava Ma Dube Bhyo Mahabhaga Dine Bhyo Dro Aho Prajavadi Padir Bhagavan Hari Veya Vanaspadino Shadisha Sasarjo Jumisham Vibhu Annam Charanamajanam Abadapadajarinam Ahastam Hastayuktanam Dibadam Chachadushpadam Yoyam Jaitranvadishto Deva Devena Janaka Prajasargahim Kalam Makshan Nardag Dumarhadam Adishadasadam Margam Kovam Yachadadi Vidam Pida Pitra Pida Mahainabi Jushtama Pravidamahe Tohanam Pida Bandur Dasham, Pashmastriyabadi, Padipajanam, Chunam, Rikyanam, Huda Sohal, Under Deheshubunanam, Almasti, Hadidi, Shura, Sarvam, Tandishnam, Shadamevam, Stoshino, Yasau, Yasamul Padinam, Behamadash, and Menulbanam, Ulbanam, Alpajja, Saya, Yachil, Saguna, Anadivartade, Adam, the Devdomer Dinam, Kilanam, Shomastua, Varshi, Hesha, Varakanyam, Patnite, Pradivishyadam. Then, Ityavandravararoham kanya apsarasi nirva somo rajaye udatva te dharmeno vaye mirem tebhyastasyam samabhavadaksha prajedasakila yasya praja visargena rogam abhuida asrayam yatha sasarjabhudani daksho duhidruvalsala redasamanasa jaiva tanmamavahida shrunum manasaiva asajalpuvam prajabhadrima praja deva asramanishyadin nahastarajala ogasa tamabhram hinamalokyam praja asargyam prajabhadi vindhya paranu Prajya Sojara Dushkaram Tava Tatrahamashanam Nama Turtham Pabaharam Param Upasvashyanu Samanam Tamasado Shayadhyam Tasma Asto Shiddham Saguhina Bhagavandamato Akshajam Dubhyam Tadavidasyami Kasyadu Shadyado Hari. So up to these verses the life of Daksha Prajapati is mentioned, how he went to Athamashana Turtham, performed his penances, and also his life prior to that, that when he married the daughter of the trees, which is known as Vashi or the Vrishakanyaga, and briefly her history also is given here, how she has born from Kandu Maharshi in the woman from the heavenly planets known as Pramloja, as and then that girl was born, her name was Vashi, she was brought up by the trees, they looked after her. And Soma, or the king, the moon planet, the predominating deity of the moon planet, Soma comes over and hands her over in marriage to Daksha Prajapati. So Daksha marries her, and from then on the process of creation begins. So prior to process of creation, Brahma instructed Daksha Prajapati that he should perform penances. It's necessary. And with this, that instruction, he went to Ahamashana Turtam, and that is where he glorified Krishna through these Hamsaguhya prayers, which we all read it now. Namaparaya vidhatane bhodaye gunatraya bhasa nimitta bandhave adrishtadamye gunadatta buddhivir nivartamana ayadhane swayam bhuvayim. That in the first verse itself, Daksha Prajapati addresses Krishna that what is the special position of the Supreme Lord? The special position of the Supreme Lord is, that is, he is beyond the three modes of material nature. We do not know much about the material nature. We take it for granted everything. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam as well as the Bhagavad Gita, three modes of material nature is the one which is like ropes binding us to this world. And when one is able to escape from these three modes of nature, one is supposed to be freed oneself or is liberated from this conditioned state. So that is the liberated state of existence, that when one frees oneself from the three modes of nature, that compared to three ropes which binds us all the time and it is difficult to break through. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. So breaking away from these three modes is not an easy thing. And even the Brahma and Shiva, they are also controlled by the three modes of nature. To even everyone in this material world, they are affected by the three modes of nature. Although we say that they are not in the modes of nature, in the lower modes of nature, like Brahma controls the modes of passion, Lord Shiva controlled the modes of ignorance, and Vishnu, who is in the mood of goodness. So although they are not specifically in that mood of goodness, it has sometimes some effect on them as well. That is how powerful these modes of nature are. And we do not understand that such a mode of nature exists even. We think that we are all gentlemen and we are all such nice people. And that nicety comes out when a crisis comes in this world. Only when how nice we are each other, it comes out in that very moment itself, our so-called nicety. But lower modes of nature, one cannot free oneself easily from that. And this is precisely the reason that in the Vedic literature, there is so much stress given to bringing the people into the higher modes of nature. Because in the lower modes of nature, it is hopeless situation. It's very difficult to get anything across into the mind. But at least if one comes to the Sandhishrayam Sibuyam Si Abhiriji Vidayam Arminam Karmidanim, Bhagavatam says that if somehow one comes to the mood of goodness, at least one can somehow able to understand a little bit of what is spiritual life, the importance of spiritual life. Everything, a lot of things. Nashayam atma bhavasto jnana divena bhaswada. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the knowledge, what Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita, last 5000 years people are reading Bhagavad Gita and still sometimes it's difficult to understand what Krishna is saying. Why we are not able to accept that? Why we are not able to understand what Krishna is saying? It's only for this reason only alone, that our mode of goodness is not good enough. That we are such in the lower modes of nature that sometimes it's difficult to understand what is transcendental knowledge is. That is why Krishna calls it as Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukham Kartum Avyayam. Then if one understands that, Krishna says Susukham Kartum Avyayam, then he will be able to live in this world happily. Because it is a more or less a released state from the prison. It's more or less like a released state from the prison. But when you are a prisoner, inside the prison, you just have to accept what the prison officer tells you to do. You have no other choice. And that is our situation. That Susugam Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmam Susugam Kartumavyayam. That, so Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in very simple terms. But still, these three modes of nature binds us strongly. And Krishna is above the modes of nature. And because he is outside the modes of nature, when Krishna was present in the planet, those who have analyzed Krishna's activities, there was not one instance when Krishna was disturbed in his mind. Everybody else, there is any, no matter who it is, how great he is, ultimately when he is told that he has to die, he will at least start a little bit shaky. Whether it is, no matter who it is, that a little fear will come. And it is not possible to take that fear out of him. Why? Because the modes of nature has strongly controlled him all along his life. And that fear, what has grown up inside, in this conditioned state, will carry on all through his life, right up to death. That's not possible to free from that. So in that situation, from Krishna's time, when Krishna spent his life in this planet, when Krishna was present, all the great acharyas are of this opinion, that there was not one instance when Krishna has shown any kind of disturbed mind or any kind of disturbed mood at all. And why? Because three modes of nature could never touch Krishna. That is why he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we are the Jivas. This is what makes the difference between us and him. So Krishna is the Supreme Lord who is never touched by, who controls the modes of nature, whereas we are controlled by the modes of nature. So Dakshaprajapati in the first verse itself glorified Krishna as one who is beyond the modes of nature. That is all he said in that verse. Namaparaya vijadani bhudaye gunatraya bhasa nimitta bandhave adrishtadami gunadatta buddhi vir nivartamanaya dhade swayam bhuve. That they have no control on you. On the other hand, you control this gunatrayam or the three modes of material nature. Krishna has spoken about material modes of nature in the Bhagavad Gita in detail as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam also. Nayasya sakhyam purusho bhavaiti sakhyam sakhavasan sammasada puresmin guno yatha gunino vyakta drishte tasmai maheshaya namaskaromi. That now this is another interesting verse. In this, all these about 10 or 12 verses, there is a lot of things Dakshaprajapati has spoken to Krishna. And from there you can see that Dakshaprajapati's level of understanding was not ordinary. He was also a very, very great personality. And somehow or the other, he took up this responsibility of creation and got into trouble with that. But apart from that, otherwise the way he glorified Krishna clearly indicates that how much understanding he had about this. Nayasya sakhyam purusho vaidhi sakhyu sakhavasan sammasada puresmin guno yatha gunino vyakta drishte tasmai maheshaya namaskaromi. That for the ordinary conditioned souls here, the Dakshaprajapati says, ordinary conditioned souls, they will never understand Krishna. It is difficult for them to understand. Whereas Krishna understands the conditioned soul very well. He is inside. He is seeing us. All our activities are monitored very closely. And he knows how we think, how we act, and what our propensities are. All known to him. But the difference is, it says here, Dakshaprajapati says to Krishna, that the difference between you and the jiva is, he is clearly making a definition here. What is the difference between the living entity and the Supreme Lord? The living entity by nature, he is ignorant of the existence of Krishna. Whereas Krishna is aware of the existence of the living entity. That is where the difference, first difference. He gives an example here that we have different senses. The eyes, the ears, the nose and tongue and all the different kinds of senses in our body. Now, with the senses, we are able to enjoy the sense gratification. We are able to enjoy the sense gratification. For example, a nice music is coming from somewhere. Immediately the ear is able to enjoy that music, and ear knows where that music is coming from, and the ear has got that potency to enjoy that music which is coming from a different place. So ear can enjoy the music, but the music cannot enjoy the ear. Music is unknown about the ear. That ear is enjoying that music. Music doesn't know that. But the thing is that the certain music, the sound vibrations that has come from that music is enjoyed by the ear. Ear is able to enjoy that. But the music is not aware that the ear is enjoying that. In a similar manner, it says in the Bhagavatam that the living entity and Krishna, the relationship is like that. Krishna can enjoy us, Krishna can see us, our proclivities and our desires, our activities, everything Krishna is witnessing. But living entity is not feeling any relationship with Krishna. So exactly like this, the sense objects and the senses. Senses are enjoying the sense objects, but sense objects cannot enjoy the senses. Jiva, the living entity, cannot enjoy Krishna, but Krishna can understand everything what's going through the living entity's mind or living entity's activities. That's what's mentioned here. Mayasya sakhyam purusho vaidhi sakhyu sakhavasan sammasada puresmin guno yatha gunino vyakta drishte tasmai maheshaya namaskaromi. To that Supreme Personality of Godhead, I pay my obeisances. But in the next verse he says to Krishna, where is the difference? Difference is deho savaksha manavo bhuta matra almanam anyam javiduparam yel sarvam bhuman veda gunam shadakyo na veda sarvajnyam anandam ide. Then deho savaksha manavo bhuta matra. What we realize about the that living entity has certain freedom. We talk about freedom always, isn't it? That we say the living entity has some freedom. What is that freedom what Krishna has given to us? We misunderstand that freedom often. That freedom, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, is like this. That with that freedom, certain facilities are given to us. That is the freedom what we have. For example, with the different senses, we have been given an opportunity to enjoy certain things in this world. That is Krishna's freedom to us. Krishna has given this freedom to us in the process of creation. That five material elements. And through these five material elements, and through the five senses of knowledge, and five senses of action, and the material body, which is made of five material elements, the jiva, the living entity, can experience this material world, can accept this material world, and come to terms with this material world in some form. Otherwise, living entity on its own has no relationship with this world. It has no connection with this world. It is pure spirit. And the dead matter, how the living entity is able to relate with the dead matter is through these senses and the material elements. So that facility, what has been given to us by Krishna's arrangement, is the independence what we refer to in the Shastra. That independence what we refer to here is that facility what Krishna has provided us. This is the living entity's freedom. That's what. So, but the result of that is the living entity, by abusing that special freedom given by Krishna, he gets entangled in the activities of Maya. And when Maya influences to a larger degree, because in reality, while talking about the material world, everything made of material elements takes birth, grows for some time, and starts by production starts, and then it starts dwindling, decay, and eventually death. These are the six stages in which the transformation takes place to matter. So everything in the matter eventually gets destroyed at some stage or the other. So matter is not a permanent thing. Matter is only a temporary thing. So when the matter is getting transformed from one form to another, the living entity who is pure spirit soul, who is free from the contamination of matter, should not be affected by that. In reality, it should not be affected. But the fact is that every one of us are affected by the change in matter. So therefore it shows that the influence of these six kinds of changes that happens in the matter, which originally should not affect the living entity, is affected by it, which shows that the consciousness has been changed, or consciousness affected by the influence of the material energy. And that is how it is explained here, that this change does not happen to Krishna. When Krishna comes here, material modes of nature doesn't affect him. Maya cannot touch him. Krishna is from the spiritual world, and Krishna's activities in this material world also are spiritual. It is not material. So when Krishna acts in this world, we should not think that Krishna's activities are similar to our activities. Although it may appear sometimes similar to our activities, these activities does not bind Krishna, unlike us. Our activities in this material world binds us very strongly. Therefore, Vedic literature gives instructions to follow very precisely what one should do and one should not do. This is the reason why Karmakandam and other things are in the Vedic literature. It is only for this reason that the Karma Yogam and Karmakandam, everything explained there in the Vedas. But Krishna is not bound by all these things, by Karmakandam or Jnanakandam, because Karmakandam and Jnanakandam comes from Krishna. So Krishna's knowledge, Krishna has given in his framework, all this has been put into that. Yado aparamo manaso nama rupam rupasya drishta smriti sambhramoshal ya iyade kevalaya so samstaya hamsaya tasmai shri sadmane namam. Then it is this verse which actually calls Krishna as a hamsam. Hamsam means swan. So why Krishna has been called as a hamsam? That's also a very important thing. Bhagavatam verses have got so much to offer as far as understanding things about Krishna is concerned. That Krishna, once it so happened that when the four Kumaras, they went to see Lord Brahma in the Satyalogam. Krishna, there he is present. Lord Brahma lives in Satyalogam. Therefore, he is known as the Satyalogadhipati or Brahmalogam. That is where he lives. So, one of his creation is these four Kumaras. For Sanaka, Sananda, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara. The four Kumaras went to see him in one instance. Now, being his children, when they went there to see him, they had some doubts in their mind. the doubts were this, that we thought we should ask our father, because at that time there were not so many universities to teach them anything. So obviously they had to go and ask their father only for getting things clarified. So they went to Lord Brahma and asked Lord Brahma some important question. The question they asked Lord Brahma was that we understand that the three modes of material nature exist. We also understand that the mind exists. And the mind and the three modes of nature are constantly, our mind and the three modes of nature are constantly in touch with each other. We all know that. It's not very difficult to understand that we all the time, it is no time you can say that you are able to free yourself from the three modes of nature. All the time, something or the other is always constantly controlling us. The three modes of nature is constantly controlling us. In other words, the mind is in constant contact with the three modes of nature. How does it go into contact? Through the senses. Senses are the doors or the exits for the mind to go to the sense objects. So what normally happens is that the sense objects, they are looking forward to come to the mind to enjoy. In other words, the sense object, the mind is looking for enjoyment, and it is these through these gates of senses that it goes into the sense objects. So sometimes when one understands this, that it is this contact with the sense objects that's causing me the problem, they decide to close their eyes, withdraw all their senses. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about this, how a yogi withdraws all his senses to himself and tries to control the mind. He does that. Kurmanga niva sarvasha. In the Bhagavad Gita, that's how it says, like a tortoise who withdraws all his body into the shell. Exactly like that, a yogi withdraws all his senses towards inside and not allow any of the senses to go out and enjoy the senses, sense objects. But the problem is, when the yogi tries to do that, the mind is saying to the mind is saying to sense objects that all the senses are closed now, so I can't come now to enjoy you. So the sense objects are saying, okay, if you can't come, we will come to you. Only they have stopped you coming to us, and we will come to you. So he closes his eyes, he keeps his ears closed, tries to control his mind, but inside the thoughts are coming about sense gratification constantly. So what do we do? So this is the problem with the sense control. That no matter, you may sit in meditation process and you may try to withdraw all your mind and mind from all sense objects, but still, if the mind has not been subdued by constant practice of Krishna consciousness, it is not possible to control this mind. This is what Krishna's comment on this word. So because it is like that, the mind finds it very hard to go out, although it's being controlled by that. So in this Bhagavadam, in this verses, it says here that Hamsaya dasmai shri sadmani nama, that how do we separate mind from the modes of nature? This was the question which before Kumaras asked Lord Brahma. We have this doubt in our mind. Can you clarify? How can we do this, not get affected by the three modes of nature? Because four Kumaras are interested in the benefit of the human society. They are discussing topics which are not normally discussed by people. So when they raise this issue, Brahma also could not answer that straight away. So normally you can see sometimes when a father, father always like to show his children at least that he knows everything. Every father thinks like that. So here also, Brahma also felt a little bit uneasy that he could not answer this question. But there is one good thing about Lord Brahma. When he is in crisis, he merely calls for Krishna's help. That is one great quality in Lord Brahma. Whether even if he gets into trouble many times, still there is always the Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye Mukhyandiyal Soraya. Srimad Bhagavatam came to him in that way. So Brahma at that point prayed to Krishna for help. How do I answer this question? It's a very important question. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasi Skandam, it's discussed in detail, much more detail than what is mentioned. But what I was trying to say, was that this name Hamsan has come to Krishna for this reason, that how to separate the modes of nature from the mind. This was the question they raised. Krishna took the form of a bird, form of this bird, swan, and appeared on the top of the table where Lord Brahma was sitting. And that is why he gave the instructions in the form of a bird. He instructed them how to do that. And that is the instruction in the later on, which comes in the 11th canto. But here, because Krishna has done that, the swan has one special ability to do. What is that ability? If you mix water and milk together and give it to the swan, swan can separate the milk from the water. It has something in its tongue, a special capacity which by nature's arrangement has been given to them. So that special quality of the in the Hamsam or the swan is the same quality, because Krishna took that form. It is exactly like separating the material nature and the mind. Because material nature and mind is like, it is not possible to separate the water and the milk, which is mixed up so nicely together. How can we separate that? It's not possible. But similarly, in the Bhagavatam it says there, because the material nature and the mind is mixed up so closely, like milk and water, the only way it can be separated, Krishna says, just like there is a specialist process which is known as Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is the process by which one can separate the mind from the material nature, from the three modes of nature. So that is what is mentioned there, and that is why he was called here as Hamsam. Vedobaramo manaso nama rupam rupasya drishtastri sambramo shal ye iyade kevalaya so samstaya hamsaya tasmai shri sadmani namam. Then there is also another thing mentioned, that when there is name and forms, we always talk about Maya and material nature. All these things comes in our, normally when we discuss the Vedic philosophy, these are very constantly used terms, material nature, which is known as Maya, three modes of nature, everything. But where does this all begin from? That is the question we have to ask. That where does this come into existence, this material nature? Everything comes from inside. It is not what is outside that is causing the problem. It is this subtle element called mind which creates everything. Mind and the senses together creates the material world for us. It is the mind and the senses that is not under control. It is not the material world at fault. We sometimes say, oh, this material world is such a place of misery, I'm going back to spiritual world. Many often you will find devotees says there, you don't have to go to spiritual world. While living in this world itself, it is possible to withdraw from this material world. Material world is within inside. It has started inside the mind, and the senses has created that material world through its unlimited material desires. When these unlimited material desires demands gratification or requires gratification, then the mind starts its activity and it goes after the sense objects, and then it starts the work, and when it starts acting in one way or the other, eventually one gets frustrated by his own activities, and when it gets frustrated, he says, this material world is nothing but a place of misery, I'm going back to spiritual world. So this is how our spiritual life begins in this material world. So, but in reality, those who are learned and realized in their life in this world, they have come to this understanding that material life and spiritual life is not something which you can separate it out like that, like the way we do with other things. That has to go at the same time, that the consciousness inside, in what platform one operates to keep a spiritual life, and separating, understanding the position of material nature and the three modes of nature, that is the way to free oneself from this concept. Names and forms, as much as when one sees the identity of the living entity with the Krishna's relationship with Krishna is realized, immediately material world is over. The material world doesn't exist for him anymore. So that's what is mentioned there in that verse. And in the next verse, after the Manishinondar Krishan Niveshinam Sashaktiviranabish Trivardhi Vaninyatha Darini Panjadashyam Manishayanashkarshandi Gudham, that this is a very modern verse, in the sense that Jnani, the Jnanamargam, the process of cultivating spiritual knowledge, that is what is discussed in that verse. How does the jnanis cultivate spiritual knowledge? That's what is mentioned there. That jnanis have a process known as panchadashyam. Normally, in the in the process, when Jnanamargam, those who are the followers of Jnanamargam, or the process of cultivating spiritual knowledge, who take to that process, their process is that the spiritual master and the disciple, they spend a long time together. And in that process of spending the time together, they have a lot of interaction takes place between the teacher and the disciple. That is a normal process. There is a complete explanation later on when Krishna talks about it later, that when a brahmachari lives in the ashram of the spiritual master, normally that he spends a very long time, something like 15 to 20 years. This was the normal period of time they spend in the association of the spiritual master. So at that time, brahmachari is trained to live a life of a brahmachari, and simultaneously he gets the opportunity to learn from the spiritual master about the different ways of analyzing the absolute truth, and also understanding through the process of knowledge how to achieve the absolute truth that is taught to him. So in that process, one of the things what is mentioned is that he gets an opportunity to what is known as lighting the fire. So a brahmachari is supposed to light the fire, and that lighting fire process is known as arani. Arani means that the spiritual master teaches the disciple how to create the fire, and through that fire, by lighting the fire and chanting the mantras, they create the fire, not by any other process. So different brahmacharis in the different processes, they have been instructed in different ways. So this lighting fire is one of the fundamentals for them to do that. And by lighting the fire, they have a system known as firewood. They rub together, and from that they are able to generate fire. Now, it is not by rubbing the wood that the fire is created. It is not a material phenomenon or chemical phenomenon that takes place. What takes place is, while rubbing the wooden pieces together, the acharya or the spiritual master teaches the disciple to chant a mantras, what is known as Samidheni mantras. There are 15 of these mantras explained in the Vedas, and all these 15 mantras are taught to the disciple how to chant them without mistake, because if you chant them with mistake, it won't have any result at all. The fire will not come out. But if you can chant them properly as it is taught by the acharya, the result will be that you will be able to generate fire. They didn't have the matchbox and cigarette lighters like we have today, but they had through mantras, they had to create fire as well. So they created fire, and this lighting fire is one of the processes for a brahmachari from the very beginning, and that he has to continuously keep this fire going. And that is in the presence of this fire that he is chanting the mantras regularly and developing his tradition of the Vedic culture. So while doing that, this Samidheni mantra, there are 15 of them, and out of these 15 mantras, the first one and the last one is repeated 3 times. So actually, in other words, there's only 11 mantra, but when it is chanted the first one 3 times and the last one 3 times, it becomes totally 15. So if one can chant those 15 mantra properly under the guidance of the acharya, one can generate fire, and therefore they are known as Samidheni mantra. So just like by chanting the mantra, one separates the fire from the wood. It says here, Daksha Prajapati says to Krishna, by chanting this mantra properly, and by chanting the mantra and rubbing these wooden pieces together, fire is automatically created. In other words, the mantras are responsible for generating the fire from the wood. Not the wood itself is not the cause of that. And because it's done in a similar way, he says here that jnanis separate the spirit soul from all the other subtle aspects of this body. How? What does this body? According to Sangha Yoga, the body has 25 elements in there. 24, and the 25th is Purusha, the living entity inside. It says like this: Prakriti Mahadahangarascha Matrascha Vedai Abhihrita Vidashakshi Purusha Panjavimshaha. then what is this 25 elements? Sangha Yogam, this is how Jnana Yogam and Sangha Yogam goes together very well. That there it says, Prakriti Mahadahangarascha Matrascha Vedehi, that Prakriti Mahatattvam Ahangaram, these are the words used in the Shastra. Material nature, Mahatattvam, which is the intelligence, Ahangaram, false ego. Abhi Prakriti Mahadahangarascha Matrascha Vedehi. Panchatanmatra. Panchatanmatra means five tanmatra. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam and gandham. That means sound. Shabdam is sound, sparsham is touch, rupam is form, rasam is taste and gandham is smell. These are known as five tanmatras in the creation. Shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandham. Prakriti mahadahangarascha matrascha bhedair api hridavidashakshi purusha panchavimshaha. Then what happens? In addition to that, there is the mind, and then there is the five material elements, panchabhutas, earth, water, air, ether and fire. And then there is five senses of knowledge, five senses of action. So if you add all these things together, it becomes 24 elements. And this is what is in the Jnana Yogam taught as the thing what covers the spirit soul. So when these 24 elements are covering the spirit soul, abhikradabhidashakshi purusha panchavimshaha. That Panchavimsha, the 25th element, Jiva is inside, which is a part and parcel of Krishna. The Jnani's process is, by the Vedic, by their own separation process, they filter all these things, different elements, which is covering the spirit soul. They are able to filter them out and eventually identify themselves with that spirit soul, what is known as the Aham Brahmasmi realization. They come to that platform. So, here, it says here that Dashaprajapati said to Krishna, That is how jnanis see you. Jnanis ultimately reach you in that way. By this process of separation of all the different material elements, different kinds of coverage on the spirit soul, which blocks its relationship with Krishna. So that is that process. It's exactly, compares here, to exactly like the brahmachari lights a fire through the mantra, and how he takes the fire out of the wood. In a similar manner, the jnani takes the spirit soul outside from all its contamination of all the different material, 24 material elements. That is how that prayer goes on. And at the end of that, the manishinondarakati samniveshinam sadakshashakti virnav bhishchatri vruddhi vanim yada darunipan chalashyam manishaya nishkarshandi gudam. That after that, these 15 mantras are given. The samitheni mantras, they are called in the, and they are present in the what is known as the Ashwalayana Shrauda Sutram. And there is a chapter in that called Dashavurna Masa Prakaranam. That is where all these mantras are explained there. Savaimama Shesha Visheshamaya Nishetan Huvana Sukhani Bhudi Sa Sarvanama Sa Vishwarupa Prasidala Anama Niruktalpa Shakti. That, but there Dashaprajapati brings it close to that and says to Krishna that it may be all like this, and these processes are not possible for ordinary people to follow, because to implement or to practice all these things, it requires a tremendous amount of effort, intelligence, and you require also a teacher who can teach these things properly. But ordinary people, they haven't got access to all these things, so for them you are present them in the form of deity for them to worship you. And you are so merciful to them that although they cannot come to you through the higher process, through the intellectual process of Jnana Margam or any other process, Sankhya Yogam, they still have the opportunity you are given to them for them to surrender to you and take your shelter. So from this you can see that Dakshaprajapati fully recognized Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yadyam niruktam majasa nirubidam diyaksha virvamanasa avodayasya ma bhulsurubam gunarubam hidatal savai gunobayu sargalakshanaham yasmin yado yena jayasa yasmai yasmin yado kurude karya deja paravanesham paramam prak prasiddham tal brahma dadheru nananya dejam yachakayo vadanam madinamai vivada sammadabho bhavanni kurvanni jesham huralpamoham tasmaina monanda gunaya bhumni asti nasti jivastu nishtayo egastayo bhinna virudha dharmayo avekshinam yinjana yoga sankhayo samambaram hanivulam brahattal yonigrahartam bhajanam bhadamulam anamarubo bhagavananandam namani rubani jajan magarmavir bhajaya samahyam parama prasidadu ya pragare jnana marir jananam yathashayam vehagado vibhadi yathanira പാർത്ഥിവമാശതോ ഗുണം സ്ഥൈശ്വരോ മേ കുരുവാൻ മനോരഥം. And that is where that Hamsa Guhya prayers finishes. And from at that point, when the prayers were completed, Sudeva Goswami says there that Krishna appeared in front of Daksha Prajapati. We will discuss that from next class. Any questions or comments?
My friend has a question. We've got the five senses. Where do dreams come into this? When we sleep and we are dreaming, we've got a separation of the senses.
Yes. We have three states of existence, which is known as Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, which means awakened state, dream state and the deep sleep. Three states of existence. In the normal condition, the senses are active. In the awakened state, the senses are active. In the dream state, the senses do not function anymore. Mind is active. In the deep sleep, even the mind stops its function. That's where it is. Shiva is Krishna's expansion. Yeah. And
liberation is granted by Krishna alone. Therefore, Krishna has a special name as Mukunda. One means they will offer liberation. Although
devotees who approach Krishna, approach Lord Shiva, by Shiva's mercy, one day they'll get an opportunity to, when their desire for freeing oneself from the modes of nature gets stronger. Not everybody in the world do not think that looking for liberation, you should never mistake like that, that everybody who comes to temple wants liberation. Hardly 1% may require asking for liberation. 99% are not looking for liberation. So that is why there is so much desire for placing so many other personalities in this world comes in. That's where it comes from. But generally people get the misunderstanding that everybody who is spiritual must be looking for liberation. That is Bhagavatam in the beginning itself, Sri Shukan said that to Parishit, that akama sarvagamova mokshagama udharati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeda purusham param. That agamam is not an easy thing. Everyone's devotional life begins with desires only. There are so many desires, when they're not getting all fulfilled, one takes to spiritual life. And then in course of time, when due to Krishna conscious, cultivating Krishna consciousness, when one gets to understand that all these things what I'm running after is not worthwhile running after, it all ends up in that understanding, then the mind turns into pure spiritual life. That is when the desires go away from one's heart. So that is why the worship of the different demigods has come from that the desire for spiritual life is not pure, in other words.
You were mentioning about the mind and senses, depending on how they interact, creates heaven or hell and pure fame.
Yeah.
So how do we understand Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's statement that this material plane is not a fit place for any gentleman?
Yes, yes. Basically, what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Prabhupada was saying was that through devotional process, material world definitely, whether it is subtle or gross, in either form, is not a good situation. No doubt about it. But great devotees, their realization is, that even while in this world, living in this world, in the middle of all this, what do you call the life, what is going on here, a devotee who has advanced spiritually would not be disturbed by all that, because his mind is attached to Krishna so much. That is why for him, material world doesn't exist actually. No matter wherever he goes, he makes that spiritual world. Like Srila Prabhupada used to explain that often, that he's able to do that. Why? Because of the strength of Krishna consciousness. But when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that this is not a place for gentlemen, in other words, if you live here like an ordinary person without understanding the goal of spiritual life, you will not find it very comfortable here. That's what he was trying to get through, the point. Whereas if you are a devotee and if you are serving Krishna with the same commitment like he did, then for him, this world or the other world makes no difference, because Krishna is always present with him all the time. So that is a very high state of realization for a devotee like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati alone could get to. But Prabhupada, when talking about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, always mentioned that he material world never touched him. He was always a Vaikuntha man. So if he has come from Vaikuntha, here also he was in Vaikuntha. Why? Because he was always doing, serving Krishna with all his heart. Never changed in 1 minute. And so therefore Prabhupada gave that special comment about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as the person from Vaikuntha. Because he never touched anything else in this world. So that's what it was pointing at. But material world is inside here. From the mind, the senses, the intelligence, all together create everything. And we are get dragged by this all the time in different directions. When this all comes under control, material world is finished. And the process of bringing it under control is Krishna consciousness. That is the way it is explained. So, stop there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.